listening nightly to our favorite shows. Radio, oh, why did you ever go? Oh, won't you please come back and entertain us? I long to turn the dial again to hear the past smile again. Radio, I miss you so.
Once again, it's time for Yesteryear. A look back at your favorite dramas, westerns, comedies, and musical variety shows from the golden age of radio. Here's your host for Yesteryear, Craig Roberts.
Time once again to settle into your favorite easy chair for another hour of vintage radio. Later on, it's Paladin with Have Gun, Will Travel, the case of the Monster of Moon Ridge. But first, let's ride the rails of mystery with The Mysterious Traveler. The Mysterious Traveler first rode the rails on Mutual in 1943, a Sunday night sustaining show. The series ran on Mutual for 9 years, bowing out in 1952, never having enjoyed a sponsor. Maurice Tarplin brought just the right amount of morbid mystery to the Traveler's voice. Like the Whistler, he never appeared in the stories, he just narrated from on high. The shows ran from wild end-of-the-world science fiction to straight crime. In some ways, The Mysterious Traveler was as close to escape in story content as it was to The Whistler. The Traveler's stories flowed from the typewriters of Robert A. Author and David Kogan, who also produced and directed. As with most unsponsored anthologies, The Mysterious Traveler avoided star players and instead drew its talent from the world of the unsung radio professional. Return with us now to those exciting days of yesteryear with The Mysterious Traveler, the case of No One on the Line from September of 1946. Another classic radio moment from the archives of yesteryear.
Major Bowes, I miss the shadow nose, Fred Allen's alley folks, the laughter of Duffy's Tavern, Helen Trent, oh, then we went to Can You Top This? Suspense in the Whistler sent those shivers up our spines. Uncle Don, I wish that he was on. Jack Armstrong, Merton Marr, Jameis, and Andy. I long to turn the dial again to hear the past smile again. Radio, I miss you. Sodio, vodio, dodio, do. Radio, I miss you so.
Mysterious Traveler.
This is the Mysterious Traveler, inviting you to join me on another journey into the realm of the strange and the terrifying. I hope you will enjoy the trip, that it will thrill you a little and chill you a little. So settle back and get a good grip on your nerves. If you can. Where are we going? Why, today we're going to accompany Mr. Harvey Benson through a fateful 24 hours of his life in a story I call No One on the Line. Our visit with Harvey Benson begins on a Wednesday evening in summer. Harvey, a self-made businessman, is smoking a cigar and reading the paper, while his wife, Linda, reads a book. It's really quite a picture of peaceful domesticity.
Well, that's that. Nothing much in the paper tonight, dear.
Too bad your poker game tonight fell through, darling. I know how you look forward to Wednesday evening.
No, well, it doesn't matter. Good book you're reading?
Oh, yes. Yes, it's very exciting. It's a new murder mystery everybody's talking about.
I would have guessed it was rather dull from the way you've been looking at the same page for 10 minutes now.
Oh, was I? I must have been wool gathering.
Well, I guess I'll go... Oh, phone. I'll get it, Linda.
No, sit still, Harvey. You're tired. I'll answer.
No, I insist, my dear. Hello. 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 That's funny. No one on the line.
Well, how strange. Maybe the phone's out of order.
No, I heard the click as someone hung up when I answered. Oh, but it's not worth wondering about. Getting late. What do you say we turn in?
And now we join Harvey again at breakfast the following morning. It's getting late, but Harvey lingers over his coffee as if he had the whole day ahead of him.
Good coffee, this. Pour me some more, will you, darling?
Of course, Harvey. But shouldn't you be leaving for your office, dear?
Oh, there's plenty of time.
But it's almost 9:30.
You seem very anxious to get me to the office, Linda. You're not trying to get rid of me by any chance.
Oh, well, of course not. But you said you had an important appointment this morning,
but the fellow will wait. Mighty good coffee, this.
Harvey. Is there anything wrong?
Anything wrong?
Yes. You seemed a little odd the last day or two and this morning.
And what's the matter with me this morning?
Oh, I don't know that anything is, but you do seem a little strange.
Strange? In what way, Linda, my dear?
Oh, I'm sorry if I've said anything to annoy you, but... Oh, I'll answer it.
Still, Linda, I'll answer it.
But, Harvey, it's probably...
I said I'll answer it. Maybe a call I've been expecting.
All right, Harvey.
Hello? 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 Strange, there's no one on the line. Same thing that happened last night.
Well, how peculiar. Oh, but that phone must be out of order.
Yes, I suppose so. Yet I could swear I heard someone hang up when I answered.
Oh, you must have been mistaken, darling.
I suppose so. You better give the company a ring, Linda.
Yes, I will, Harvey, right away.
Good, and now I do have to be going. See you tonight, darling.
So now we accompany Harvey Benson to his office. Because we're spending one complete day with him, remember? His office is large and luxurious, reflecting the success Harvey Benson has achieved in the world by hard work and constant vigilance. Once arrived there, Harvey plunges into his work. Until shortly before noon, the sound of the interoffice phone arouses him.
Excuse me, Mr. Benson.
Yes, Miss Johnson?
Mr. Mungo is here to see you. Shall I send him in?
No, ask him to wait. I'd like to see you for a moment first, Miss Johnson.
Certainly, Mr. Benson. I'll be right in.
Yes, Mr. Benson?
Sit down, please, Miss Johnson.
Yes, sir. I've brought my book.
You won't need it. I just want to chat with you for a moment.
I don't understand, Mr. Benson.
I just want to talk to you, that's all. I don't believe you and I have ever talked before as person to person, have we?
No, sir, we haven't.
And you've been with me, 7 years, isn't it?
7 years next month.
7 years, and we've never talked as equals. But then, I've never needed advice before. You've noticed that I never ask advice, I suppose.
Well, yes, I have, Mr. Benson.
Make your own decision and act upon it, is my motto. And yet, now I'm going to ask your advice as a woman, not as a secretary.
Well, I'll try to be helpful if I can.
Good. Now then, picture for yourself a woman who has always been very practical and, let's say rather cold. Suddenly this woman becomes dreamy and absent-minded. She stands for minutes at the window, looking at nothing. You speak to her, she doesn't hear you. What would you deduce from that?
Why, I'd say she was in love.
Excellent. Now suppose this woman is married. Suppose on several occasions when her husband is in the room... You're following me, aren't you?
Oh, yes, sir.
Suppose on these occasions the phone rings and this married woman answers, and each time she tells the party calling he has a wrong number. What then?
Why, I suppose that could happen.
But now, Miss Johnson, suppose on several occasions the husband answers and the party at the other end hangs up without speaking.
Why, it sounds like someone trying to call the wife without her husband knowing about it.
Exactly. I felt sure I couldn't be wrong. But it's helpful to have your opinion and back me up. So thank you very much, Miss Johnson.
Why not at all, Mr. Benson?
And now please send in Mr. Mungo.
Yes, sir, right away. Mr. Benson will see you now.
Okay, sister. Good morning, Mr. Benson.
Come in, Mungo, and close the door.
Sure, Mr. Benson.
Sit down.
Yeah, sure.
You have the information for me?
Everything's right here in my report.
Good, let's have it.
I checked thoroughly on the four names you suggested.
And which one was she meeting?
I only witnessed one meeting, Mr. Benson. The other time, she gave me the slip.
Then you don't know your business.
Well, what she did was go to Duke and Baker's department store, take a dress into one of the fitting rooms, and then leave by another door. I couldn't very well follow her there.
You should have managed it somehow. Never mind that. What did you learn?
I'll give you the general report first before mentioning names.
All right, do so, but don't dawdle about it.
Yes, Mr. Benson. As you'll see, I've called the four individuals you suggested parties A, B, C, and D.
Yes.
Now, party B, Mrs. Benson knew before her marriage, but I found no evidence they have ever communicated since.
Yes, go on.
Parties C and D she also knew before she became Mrs. Benson, and from time to time she's seen both of them since. But those meetings appear to have been accidental.
Maybe so. Get on with it.
But party A, the architect one, I traced him back to Atlanta. That's his hometown.
Yeah? He comes from Atlanta, too.
Yes, they went to high school together. Were sweet on each other for a year or two. He used to keep her picture in his room.
Oh, he did he?
Yeah. And since he reached New York 3 months ago, he's phoned her four or five times, according to the switchboard operator at his apartment house.
Yes, of course. I remember how excited she was when they met at the Jennings dance 2 months ago.
And 3 days ago, get this, when Mrs. Benson was downtown shopping, she dropped into Rass for lunch and she ran into him there.
No doubt it was a planned meeting.
It was very cleverly done. Then they sat for 2 hours talking and... Well, that meeting was no accident.
No, of course it wasn't. Donald Arkwright. Yes, I was sure of it.
Yes, sir. But if you want me to keep on following
No,
him...
No. It's time for more decisive steps.
I don't understand.
You're not supposed to. But if you knew me better, you'd know that the moment my mind is made up, I act.
I see, Mr. Benson.
And I propose to act now. So send me your bill and forget the whole affair.
Very good, Mr. Benson. I'll forget the whole affair. I'm very good at that. Good day, Mr. Benson.
Goodbye.
Hello, Donald Arkwright speaking.
Oh, hello, Arkwright. This is Harvey Benson. You remember me, Linda's husband?
Well, yes, of course, Mr. Benson. How are you?
Fine, thanks. I'm calling because I need an architect.
Oh, and you wanted me
yes,
to...
Yes, I'm going to put up a summer place out on Long Island, and I wanted you to draw the plan.
Well, that's great, Mr. Benson. Now, what kind of site have you?
I'll do better than tell you. I'll show it to you. That is, if you're free to drive out with me this morning.
Well, I do have an appointment.
Cancel it. This will be well worth your while, I assure you.
Well, all right, I will, Mr. Benson.
Good. Then I'll pick you up in my car. Say about 45 minutes.
All right, that'll be fine. I'll be looking for you.
Good. I'll see you shortly, then. We'll have lunch on the way. Miss Johnson.
Yes, Mr. Benson?
I'm leaving for the day. Cancel any appointments I may have.
Now Harvey Benson leaves his office, and we follow him to the garage where he keeps his cars.
Joe, you have my car ready?
I got it right here, Mr. Benson. But look, don't you want to take the new coupe?
No, I said I wanted the sedan.
Yeah, sure, but since that little accident Mrs. Benson had, the sedan ain't in too good a shape.
It'll do for today.
Yeah, but what I'm getting at is it ain't safe.
I'm not worried. You put in plenty of gas?
Yep. By gallons, Mr. Benson. But look now, don't take no chances with them brakes. They don't hold worth a cent.
I'm aware of that.
And that right-hand door, it sticks something terrible.
What of it? What do you care?
Oh, I just thought
well,
I'd
don't.
Golly, he's certainly in a hurry. With them brakes the way they are, he'll kill somebody if he ain't careful.
At 87th Street, Harvey Benson picks up his passenger, Donald Arkwright. And several hours later, they are far out in a lonely section of Long Island.
Just a quarter of a mile more, Arkwright. Up ahead on top of those cliffs. That's where my lots are.
I surely appreciate your asking me to prepare the plans, Mr. Benson.
Linda suggested you for the job. Said you were a first-rate architect.
Well, that's swell of her. I wasn't even sure she'd remember me.
Oh, she remembers you very well. I could see how happy she was to meet you at the Jennings party.
Yeah, I was tickled that she recognized me. After all, it's 6 years since we last met.
Well, why shouldn't she recognize you? After all, you were a sweetheart, weren't you?
Well, I suppose you could have called us that. We did have some good times together. Riding, hiking, and dancing.
Well, it's plain she still thinks a lot of you. Now, there's the sight. Right up ahead.
Oh, yes. Smack on the edge of the cliff, huh? Well, you'll have a nice view all the way across the sound.
80 feet sheer to the water. Not another house in miles. Look, you can see all the way down to the rocks from the bend in the road here.
Well, those waves sure are kicking up a fuss. Man wouldn't last long down there.
No. No, not long.
But you don't have to worry. I'll build you a house that'll never slide over the edge.
I'm sure you'll never give me any cause to worry. Well, here we are. Have to pull the car a bit off the road, though, to park.
Oh, pretty steep here.
Yes.
I'll have to put in a retaining wall. Terrace the ground, I guess.
There. Ah, got her off the road. We'll leave her here, where we'll have room to turn around when we're ready to start back.
Sure hope you have good brakes. I'd hate to slide over onto those rocks down there.
I'd hate to myself. Oh, want to get out and block the wheels for me?
Oh, yes, of course. Yeah. Door won't open. Seems to be stuck.
That's right. That door does open hard. Never mind. I'll get out on this side and block them.
Well, say, aren't you forgetting to set the brakes?
Not necessary.
But this slope is steep here.
I know what I'm doing.
But look, the car's moving already. It's starting to roll forward.
Yes, it is, isn't it? And it'll keep on rolling.
Mr. Benson? Can't stop your car. The brakes won't hold. Mr. Benson, it's gone over the cliff.
Harvey stands there, watching the car roll toward the edge, while his passenger struggles frantically to get out. It only has 10 feet to go, 5 feet, and then on the very edge, the wheels twist against a rock, and the car stops. Harvey runs down the slope and reaches the spot. Just as Donald Arkwright manages at last to scramble out.
Mr. Benson, you did that on purpose.
Yes, Arkwright, I did.
You tried to kill me.
Exactly, I tried to kill you.
But why? You must be crazy.
No, Arkwright, only myself. If you knew me better, you'd know that no one tries to take anything away from me without suffering for it.
What are you talking about?
You know what I'm talking about. What's mine is mine. And everything that's mine, I keep.
You are crazy. I can see it.
Get away from me. Take your hands off of me.
No,
get right. You haven't a chance.
Yes. Let me go, I say.
You'll do nothing. In this world, a man has to be strong and ruthless to stay on top. And I'm both.
No, you're pushing me toward the edge. Let me go.
You're going over, do you hear? You're going over.
No.
For a moment, Harvey stands, glaring down at the white-capped waters that have received his victim. Then he turns to the car. A quick twist of the steering wheel, a push, and the car is gone. Then Harvey turns away, back to the road. He walks a mile, 2 miles, three, until he gets a lift from a driver who takes him to the nearest state police barracks, where State Police Sergeant Thomas hears his story.
Mr. Benson, you say you got out of the car to block the wheels, and the car started rolling forward?
Yes, Sergeant. After I tried to open the door, but it stuck. The car was at the edge by the time he got it open. He jumped, but he was too late.
I see. All right, I have the details straight.
It was horrible, Sergeant. He was my friend. There was nothing I could do to help. Nothing.
Yes, I understand, Mr. Benson. You were quite alone at the time, no witnesses?
No, we were miles from the nearest house. Why do you ask?
Well, because there's a Boy Scout camp about a mile from there, Mr. Benson. I thought some of the boys might have been within sight.
Oh, no. There wasn't anyone in Sergeant.
I see. Well, I guess that's all, Mr. Benson. It's just about dark now, so we probably won't recover the body before tomorrow. I'll notify you the minute we do so you can identify your friend.
And so, late in the evening, Harvey returns home to find Linda waiting for him anxiously.
Is that you, Harvey?
Yes, my dear, it is.
Well, I waited dinner as long as I could, and then I went ahead and ate. Shall I fix you something now?
No, thank you. I've eaten. Let's sit down, Linda. I'd like to talk to you.
Why, of course, Harvey.
You have the phone fixed?
The phone? Oh, no, I called the company, but they said there was nothing wrong with it.
I see. Well, they were quite right. I discovered that the trouble was from another source.
I don't think I understand you, Harvey.
Linda, my dear, do you consider me a fool?
Why, of course not.
Don't you suppose that I've known what was going on for some days now?
Just what do you mean, Harvey?
When a woman suddenly takes to mooning around the house, staring out the window, not answering when she's spoken to, the signs are unmistakable.
Are you speaking about me, Harvey?
And when that same woman gets several phone calls while her husband is in the room and each time tells the caller, "I'm afraid you have the wrong number. There's no one here by that name." It would be a very stupid husband indeed who failed to notice.
Yes. Yes, I suppose it
would.
But
the crowning touch was those calls when there was no one on the line. One several days ago, one last night, and now one this morning.
But Harvey,
I answer and there's no one on the line. But who's there when you answer? That's what I want to know, Linda. Well, what have you to say?
There isn't much I can say, Harvey.
Oh, then you admit it. Those calls were from someone I wasn't supposed to know about. Someone you're in love with.
Yes. Someone I'm in love with. Someone I've been trying to bring myself to tell you about.
Someone you've been meeting at tawdry rendezvous.
Nothing of the kind. We've met, yes. But they've been perfectly innocent meetings, lunch, and a walk in the park. Nothing worse than that.
You're a fool to expect me to believe that.
Yes, I suppose I am. And yet it's the truth.
Well, it doesn't matter. But may I inquire what your plans are?
I want a divorce, Harvey.
So that you can marry this unknown who telephones you and then hangs up when I answer.
Yes. And I'm sorry that ever happened. It was my fault. I suggested it. You see, I was afraid of you, Harvey.
Afraid? Of me? Of your loving husband?
I was. But I'm not anymore. I only want to be free of you. Free to marry the man I really love.
Very interesting, my dear, but slightly impractical. Do you really think I'd let anyone take you away from me?
I'm afraid you have no choice.
Well, you're wrong. It's you who have no choice. You're penniless, Linda. You have no family, no money, no training. You have only me.
What are you trying to say?
I'm just leading up to a story I have to tell you, Linda. A very tragic story which occurred only this afternoon.
And so Harvey tells Linda the story of the afternoon's events. Well, not the true story, of course. But she guesses the truth as he speaks and recoils in horror when he is finished.
Oh, you've killed him. You deliberately murdered him.
Nonsense. It was a tragic accident. The police have already exonerated
him. You killed him? Oh, no. No, I don't believe you. You're just trying to torture me.
You know me better than that. You know that what I have, I keep at any cost.
Then you did kill him. You're a murderer.
Don't be hysterical, my dear. I shall be forced to discipline you.
I'm going to the police. I'm going to tell them the truth.
Linda, come back here.
No, no, you can't stop
me. Linda, come back. Come back, I say.
Linda is gone before Harvey can get to the door. Harvey pauses, irresolute. Then he shrugs, turns back, sits down, lights a cigar.
Good cigar. I must remember to order another box. And so, Linda, you've rushed off to the police. In your heart of hearts, you hope that I'm lying. Your first move will be to rush to a telephone. You'll put a nickel and dial with trembling fingers. You'll hear the phone at the other end ring.
and with beating heart you'll wait, hoping against hope that Donald Arkwright will answer.
But he won't. And then you'll know I've told the truth.
Then...
Will you come back first, or will you go on to the police?
I rather think you'll go to the police, for you are excited just now. And you'll return with a detective or two. I shall have to explain to them, tell them of your hysterical spells.
Then you and I will be left alone. And in a day or two, I think we'll leave on a little trip.
Yes, up to my hunting lodge,
where we can be alone there. And we'll get to know each other well again. Very well. And in the future... the bell. So you're back already, Linda. I guessed wrong.
Just a moment, my dear. I'm coming.
Harvey crosses to the door, opens it, and recoils in surprise.
Good evening, Mr. Benson.
Well, if it isn't Sergeant Thomas. And I see my wife is with you.
Yes, we met in the lobby. She came back up with me. I'd like to come in.
Why, of course.
After you, Mrs. Benson. These other men will wait out here.
Thank you, Sergeant.
And now do sit down, Linda. And you too, Sergeant. Cigar.
No, thanks. We might as well waste no time, Mr. Benson. We've recovered your friend's body.
Already? But surely you didn't come here to tell me that.
They know you killed him, Harvey. They know.
Please, Linda. You must forgive my wife, Sergeant. She's overwrought. I suppose she's been babbling some nonsense or other to you.
She told me a story. I don't think it's nonsense.
Of course it is. She's hysterical.
But there were witnesses, Harvey. There were witnesses.
What? That's absurd. There was no one within miles.
Except a camp of Boy Scouts. Four of them with a scoutmaster were lying in the grass half a mile away when you drove up. They were watching for birds with field glasses.
You're lying.
And with natural curiosity, they turned their glasses on you. They saw your struggle on the cliff.
No, you're lying.
They went to another police barracks to report, or I'd have been here sooner. Here are copies of the affidavits they signed.
Affidavits?
Yeah. Look them over.
Affidavits. Five of them. Yes, they seem to be in order. So there were witnesses.
I dare say their evidence is unshakable.
You haven't a chance, Benson. Well, those men outside are city detectives. Are you going to come quietly?
Yes. Why not? What else is there to do?
You're caught, Harvey, and I'm glad. Glad.
Yes, I'm caught. But precious little good that'll do you, Linda, because he's dead.
Do you hear? Donald Arkwright is dead.
Donald Arkwright?
Yes. You wonder how I knew it was he, don't you? Well, I hired a private detective.
Oh.
And he discovered that Arkwright had been phoning you. That you'd been slipping away to meet him. He managed to follow you to one of those innocent luncheons.
Oh, that luncheon? But that meeting was an accident.
A very clever accident. But not clever enough to save Arkwright because he's dead, do you hear? And no matter what happens to me, I've beaten you.
You're insane. You always have been with your lust for power. And I never guessed it till now.
Fine words. But they won't change the fact that your beloved is dead and that I've taken him from you.
You killed Donald Arkwright because you thought I was in love with him. You've killed the wrong man.
No, I didn't. It was Arkwright. I know it.
Oh, no. Don Arkwright was just an old friend. The man I love is someone you've never met, whose name I see now you don't even know.
I don't believe you.
You've committed murder and you've been caught. And all for nothing.
No.
And that knowledge is worse to you than any punishment the law can inflict.
You're lying. It was Arkwright who phoned and hung up when I answered. I tell you it was. It couldn't have been anybody else.
No. No.
Better answer it, Mrs. Benson.
No, I'll answer it. Hello? Hello? Hello!
This is the mysterious traveler again. Well, that was rather a hectic 24 hours for Harvey Benson, wasn't it? He shouldn't have been quite so sure of himself. It never pays. Those phone calls now. If you get any calls and find there's no one on the line, don't be quite as hasty as he was. You might get into a bad jam. I know someone else who didn't wait to make sure of his facts, and he... Oh, you're getting off here. Oh, I'm sorry. But I'm sure we'll meet again. I take this same train every week at this time.
From September of 1946, it's been The Mysterious Traveler with no one on the line. In a moment, we'll ride out west to San Francisco with Have Gun, Will Travel and The Monster of Moon Ridge as this edition of Yesteryear continues.
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio, where the big bands swing. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear. Here's Craig Roberts.
Have Gun, Will Travel was one of the few radio shows that originated on television. Beginning in the 1950s as Richard Boone TV series, Have Gun revisited the trend a few years later and migrated to radio. The lead was Simply Paladin, a Western soldier of fortune with an even temper and a fast gun. Paladin did the dirty work others wouldn't do, and for a hefty price. He operated by the same code of the West that made Marshall Dillon tick. Often he stepped up to the line, but rarely crossed it. The role went to John Denner. Nobody could duplicate Boone, and Denner didn't even try. His interpretation of Paladin was an interesting contrast. Denner comes across as a new Paladin. The show premiered on CBS in November of 1958 and ran till November 27th of 1960, thus becoming one of the last radio dramas. Denner was supported by Ben Wright as Hayboy and Virginia Gregg as Hayboy's girlfriend, Miss Wong. The series, created by Herb Meadow and Sam Rolfe, announced by Douglas Hughes. When last heard, Paladin was heading back to Boston to claim a $100,000 inheritance. It was an unusual finish to an unusual series, the cowboy riding east into the sunrise. Return with us now to those exciting days of yesteryear with Have Gun, Will Travel, Monster of Moon Ridge, from March of 1959. Another exciting moment from the archives of yesteryear.
There's something loose on that mountaintop that's bigger than any man I've ever seen, and stronger. Before I leave, I intend to find out what it is.
Have Gun, Will Travel. Starring Mr. John Daner as Paladin. San Francisco, 1875. The Carlton Hotel, headquarters of the man called Paladin.
Will not change your mind, Mr. Paladin. You still go?
I'm afraid so, hey boy. Oh, by the way, send a dozen long-stemmed roses to Miss Julie Parker. And regrets.
Oh, do not go there, Mr. Paladin. Please.
Why not? Why does this trip bother you so much?
Oh, I read a newspaper. Monster at Moon Ridge. Lady bewitched by apparition. Oh, please, you don't go there, Mr. Paladin.
I've already been hired and accepted. I'm leaving right away.
Oh, then, let me, please.
What have you got in that jar?
Please. Dragon tooth powder.
Dragon tooth?
These are one here, and one here. Keep you from harm. Dragon's tooth powder, very powerful protection.
Your new country has a better formula for destroying superstition, hey boy. Equal parts of reason and daylight. But I thank you for the friendship behind the thought.
Then you go. You see Mr. Vito Bella?
That's right, Vito Bella, Bowtown, California. Even if you've had embarrassing dandruff for years, you can get rid of it now in 3 minutes. That's all it takes with Fitch Dandruff Remover Shampoo. Yes, unsightly dandruff's gone in 3 minutes with Fitch, quickest, easiest of all leading shampoos. What's more, using Fitch regularly is guaranteed to keep embarrassing dandruff away. Just apply in the unique Fitch manner. Before you wet hair, rub in 1 minute. This way, Fitch shampoo penetrates right down to the scalp. Next, add water. Lather 1 minute to wash every trace of dandruff out of your hair. Then rinse 1 minute. All that loosened dandruff goes down the drain. In 3 minutes, with Fitch, one rubbing, one lathering, one rinsing, dandruff's gone. At the same time, gentle Fitch can leave your hair up to 35% brighter. To get rid of dandruff problems forever, brighten hair too. Use Fitch regularly. Get Fitch Dandruff Remover Shampoo today, only 59 cents. The Indians have a name for the high mountain lands back of Placerville. They call it Shadow Ground. Indians have a way of seeing things in the shape of a piece of land that no white man can see, so they always bypass it. They didn't like the thunder that boiled up against the peaks and rolled down the canyons. But then the Indians had little use for gold and silver, and the white men did. And the white men built their town where a teepee village might have been, close to the top of Moon Ridge. It was after dark, and the sky was heavily overcast when I pulled up in front of the sheriff's office in Bowtown.
Hold it right there.
What? I'm looking for the sheriff.
That's me. Who are you?
My name is Paladin.
Riding in at night with black horse and black trail clothes? I'm surprised you didn't get your head shot off.
Well, do you have to hold that gun on me?
Come on in. He's a hobgoblin, ain't you heard?
Oh, you smart.
This is Jake Kelly, Mr. Paladin. He carries silver bullets in his gun.
Really?
Claims something grabbed him on top of Moon Ridge one night. Sit down. I'll pour you some coffee.
Thanks.
Where are you from, Mr. Paladin?
San Francisco.
Oh, that's a long way.
Are you the fellow Vito said he was in for? About Emily?
He wants to know what's bothering her. I'm going to try to find out.
Well, I'll tell you what's wrong with Emily. She's hexed, that's what. And you'd know I'm talking true, Dan, if you'd ever ride up there and see her yourself.
Sheriff's got to stay around town. Now, you know that.
You ain't set foot out since the time your posse got scattered.
No, that was a little accident. Two horses run away and folks build it into something big. There ain't nothing up there.
Oh, Miss Paladin, I was as far from it as I am from you. I seen it. Yeah, half man, half bear. Yeah, ooh, and footprints this long. Human at one end, claws at the other.
Well, I guess I'll have to see them, too.
Don't believe me. All right. When you get to that Bella place, you ask Emily Bella what carried her off, Yeah, but no, don't ask Dan here. No, yeah. He's sheriff. And if he admitted there was something up there, he'd have to go on out after it.
Get out of here, Jake. Now, go on.
Yeah.
Crazy old coot.
Sheriff, is there anything valuable up there? Minerals? Grazing lands? Any reason for someone to scare people away?
No. Formation ain't right for gold or silver. Indians didn't want it. Said it was full of spirits.
You know, a short time ago, I was feeling superior to a Chinese friend of mine when he sprinkled dust on my coat. I forgot that he came by his superstitions honestly, that he learned them from the cradle. I can't find the same excuse for you, Sheriff.
Well, I ain't superstitious.
Why the mistletoe above your door?
Oh, that. Forgot it from Christmas, I guess.
There's an old belief that it wards off evil spirits.
All right, Paladin. The Bella Place is north out of town. The last house on the way to Moon Ridge Country.
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio, where the big bands swing. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear.
The Bella Place was run down and listless, with a small light gleaming in the window, and the figure of a woman seated on the porch steps, a young woman, dark, plain, no shoes or stockings, long hair, and the most vacantly staring eyes I have ever seen. Good evening. Miss Emily Bella?
It's dark.
Yes?
Oh, Mr. Bella?
Yes?
My name is Paladin.
Oh. Mr. Paladin. Call me... Oh. Momento, please. Emily. Now, you promised you'd tell Papa when you stepped outside. Remember? Cold here. And when a visitor comes, a big girl says what? Huh?
How do you do?
How do you do, Emily?
Very good. Now you come in the house with us, huh? Emily, you can go to your room. A dozen years ago, there was, in this valley, an epidemic. Took my wife, almost my daughter.
I'm sorry.
Afterwards, Emily's body grew, but her mind... She remains a child. Wine?
Please. Yeah. Well, this epidemic, what was it?
Oh, we don't know. No doctors here. There was a young boy who was affected the same way. People treat him like an animal. They call him names. They kick him until he's a mother. But she took him away. So I have to leave too. Bring Emily here, far from the town. The land here is... It's no good, but we manage.
Those dolls are hers?
See, she is of an age where toys are pleasant.
She's fortunate to have you as a father.
I think she's fortunate in other ways. Maybe you don't know what I mean, huh?
Perhaps I do. There's nothing shocking, ugly about remaining a child. The best age of all, their world is wonderful, mysterious, half real, half make-believe. The world you and I live in, Mr. Bella, is not always as pleasant.
I think you're a wise man, Mr. Paladin. We drink. Salud.
Salud. The newspaper said Emily was this way because of shock, some unusual experience.
A spell cast by the monster of a Moon Ridge.
Since that story is untrue, why do you want to pay me $200, Mr. Bella?
Your telegram said $500.
You haven't answered my question.
Mr. Paladin, there is something on Moon Ridge. It took Emily away from me for a week. And she wishes to go back to it. I don't want to lose my daughter.
Go on.
But that week, I search for her. I find her prints and other prints, which I will not describe because...
Half bear, half man?
You have heard, huh? Now, she will not tell me, even her father, what kept her there. But she was not harmed.
She wishes to return to this
yes,
thing?
Yes. She has tried twice to run away.
Then I think it's time you let your daughter go back to Moon Ridge, Mr. Bella.
What?
The three of us will leave first thing in the morning. morning was dark and foreboding with the threat of rain in the air. Low clouds hung over the peaks and in the valleys, twisting the trees into gnarled shapes and making the rocks grotesque and sudden to come upon. All very unreal. But the track we came across on the top of Moon Ridge late that afternoon was real enough.
Half a man, half a bear, huh?
Maybe.
Emily. No, huh? Mr. Paladin, be honest with me, please. What make this print?
I don't know, Mr. Bella.
No, it's going to be dark less than an hour. Hey, what is that?
I'd say it was a bear.
Emily!
Wait!
Emily, come back! Paladin, she's going down the canyon.
You follow with the horses. I'll try to catch her. The canyon walls were steep and rocky, and it made the climb down them treacherous. By the time I was standing on the floor of the canyon, darkness was coming overhead. I walked toward what I thought might be the head of the canyon, only to find a wall of granite blocking my way. But no Emily. No sign of Bella. No way out. But something. Something watching me. Something old, bent in tattered clothing, witch-like in the quick look I had, then gone suddenly. You come back here. All right. I know whoever you are. Listen to this carefully. I have a gun. I'm not going to be frightened away. Are you there? Can you hear me? I warn you that I'm going to... Oh. When I regained consciousness, I was inside an old mine shaft. Chain on my leg, minus guns. A very real-looking bear was chained across from me. There, in the dim light filtering back from the opening of the mine shaft, I saw something moving slowly toward me. Something which seemed only half-human. Something old and horrible. I waited there, quiet, as the thing came closer. What do you want with me?
Leave while you can.
She had dropped a small sledgehammer before she turned and left. It took me the rest of the night to pound out the connecting pin so that I could remove the shackles from my leg. Outside it was morning, bright and clear. Bella, over here.
Oh, I've been riding all night. You seen Emily?
No.
Here, I found your gun and a belt, Bella.
Oh, thank you very much.
I didn't know what to do. I half expected to find your body.
Now, let me ask you something. Bella, has anyone ever been hurt in Moon Ridge country here? Actually, physically injured?
No.
Only frightened?
Yes.
I've been frightened, too, but I'm not hurt. Bella. I think I know where Emily is.
Where?
I would say up there.
Huh?
Beyond that cliff that backs the canyon.
The cliff?
Possibly a meadow behind there.
Oh. The trail would be worse than in Sicily. It would frighten a bad rider.
And with a little clever discouragement, even a good rider. Come on. It was a steep trail, but a worthwhile one to follow because at the end of it, there was a meadow brilliant in the high sunlight. And there was a house with a fireplace and smoke coming from a chimney. Not very mysterious at all.
Hey, someone living up here.
Very comfortably, I'd say.
Paladin, look there, across the meadow. Emily, my Emily.
Wait.
No, wait for what? She may be hurt.
Does she sound like she's in trouble, Bella? Look, there's a boy with her. Do you recognize him?
Maybe. It could be Maria's boy, the one I told you who was afflicted like Emily.
Yes, the mother and son, the ones they ran out of town.
I think it's time that we visit her, huh?
There's no need.
Maria?
Yes, I watched you two climb the trail up there. You have no respect for witches.
But I have a great deal of respect for a clever woman.
So, where else could I take my son? I had no money. I had to find a place where people wouldn't ridicule him.
Mr. Bella suffered from the same things.
See, and once we were old friends, Murray. You should have had faith in me.
Well, I should have sent her away the first time she wandered up here, but it's just so good to see children happy together.
The soil is good up here?
Better than below.
Hmm?
More sun and more water. Why talk of it?
Why not?
Because there's always a man somewhere who won't scare off, like this one.
I'm sorry.
Materialize an apparition on a broomstick in front of him, and he'll ask it to sweep the floor. The monster footprints I made, half mine, half a bear's, they meant nothing. I've run out of tricks. I've moved before. We can do it again.
Why move?
See, why move, huh? If I lived here, there would be no man-bear track, no cave to put foolish men in and then release him to run frightened, shouting foolish things. I think since I am a man, there would be a gun in my hand and friends would be welcome, others would not.
If a man has something to say, he comes right out and says it.
Yes, well, Maria, I think perhaps I like your land.
And I think I'll be going. I'll expect $200 to be placed in my San Francisco account, Mr. Bella. And I suspect that you got more than you bargained for.
But you will get what you bargained for, Mr. Paladin, $500.
You have to ride through town, I suppose, and talk to the sheriff?
No. Ignorant and prejudiced people like to be deceived, and they deserve it when they are. Why confuse them with the truth?
Oh, Mr. Paladin, you're back safe all in one piece.
And glad to be back, hey boy.
Was it bad?
Oh, bad for people who believe in witchcraft. Any messages for me?
Oh, yes, sir. Many messages. Let me see. Lady send note and say you call on her when you come back.
Uh-huh.
Another lady send servant over and tell you not to call on her when you get back.
What else?
Is all.
Well, in that case, tell me the name of the lady over there, hey boy.
Oh, yes, sir. It's Miss Romero from Spain. Uh-huh. Very new in this country.
Thank you. Miss Romero?
Why, yes.
My name is Paladin. May I be of service to you?
Service, senor?
Si. It is the custom for a gentleman to offer his services to a lady in this land.
Oh? What kind of services?
Any kind the lady wishes. Dining in fine restaurants, the theater, the opera. Perhaps a carriage ride to historical points of the city. Your heart names it.
I like these customs, senor. But isn't such a relationship fraught with possibilities?
It is, senorita. All kinds of possibilities. Shall we begin with the possibility of dinner this evening?
Have Gun, Will Travel. Created by Herb Meadow and Sam Rolfe, is produced and directed by Norman McDonald, and stars John Daner as Paladin, with Ben Wright as Hayboy. Tonight's story was written by Gene Roddenberry and adapted for radio by John Dawson.
Featured in the cast were Lawrence Dobkin, Virginia Christine, Jess Kirkpatrick, and Gene Bates. Hugh Douglas speaking. Join us again next week for Have Gun, Will Travel.
From March of 1959, it's been Have Gun, Will Travel with Monster of Moon Ridge. That's all the time we have on the program today, but join us again next week at the same time and invite a friend to listen and together enjoy more great moments from the golden age of radio. I'm Craig Roberts with those fabulous days of yesteryear. Till next time, so long.
Radio, remember radio. We'd sit and close our eyes and use our imagination. Comedy, mystery, a fireside chat. Together we sat, listening nightly to our favorite shows. Radio, I miss you so. Dio, vodio, dodio, do. Radio,
preceding program, copyright Edgewater Productions, all rights reserved.
Supported Swing Street Radio, KSSR DB San Francisco, where the big bands swing.